Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
We've had some great sleep last night. Adam White, good morning to you. Have you had any?
Not a lot. Now, I was really good at about 4 o'clock this morning. I was bouncing out of bed.
Out of bed?
Or bouncing out of a couch situation. I'm a bit tired now than I was a couple of hours ago.
You're a bit fatigued.
So here's a bit of a wall.
Cup of tea will fix that. You just had a cup of
tried
tea.
That.
You might need another six.
Lipton peach iced tea type, you know?
No. Well, there's your first problem. You've gone exotic. Very. I'm surprised you've gone the flavour. You're a simple man. What's with the peach iced tea?
Just to try and get a bit of zhuzh to me. Because I'm bloody tired.
Well, I'll give you a chance to freshen up. Jimmy Bartels here, triple premiership player, Brownlow medalist, North Smith medalist, all-round good 10 dude, father-to-be again shortly. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Hollywood. Holiday Harford.
Hollywood holiday.
Because you look so beautiful in the orange this morning. You're just a bit of razzle-dazzle.
Brightened up.
You know why he's worn that colour?
Why?
Well, because he has been on a holiday into the sort of the Asian region, and there wasn't a lot of sun. So
what do you mean
he's
there wasn't
had to
a lot
wear
of sun?
Some orange to try and create a bit of colour.
Fake it until you make it sort of stuff.
It doesn't matter if there's sun or not for me anyway. I don't see it. If you burn and peel and just start that cycle again, it's not a good cycle. So you just stay inside, just get to the pool, go to the bar, go back to bed. That's what you do for a whole week. It's fantastic.
Can I ask you two learned gentlemen?
Of course you can.
Lean on you two for advice. A bit more experienced than I am.
Yes.
It's just an etiquette sort of thing, a sporting etiquette before we get into the serious stuff.
Yes.
Is it acceptable? My son and I find it hilarious. That when you drive past the golf course and then you're in the middle of their backswing, you're allowed to hold down the horn?
Unacceptable, Jim. Unacceptable.
Describe that as immature behaviour. That's the same sort of behaviour of driving past a local cricket ground and winding down the window and yelling out, "How's that?" as they're going to the pole.
I don't mind that. No. That's all right.
Well, the how's that? Or
the how's that's all right.
No, I think I'm in a much better position. So... You know the road they use is the Formula One track at Albert Park.
Yes.
So you can essentially go from South Melbourne to South Yarra.
Yes.
That windy one.
Windy one.
I got a guy at absolute beauty. Even his mates he was playing with, like, just started giving the fist pump. He was on the tee, and he looked like one of those noobs that you really need to actually give it, because he was taking too long.
What did you call him?
Noob.
A noob?
Newbie. Young rookie sort of.
Oh, right.
Yeah, all the gear, no idea
all
sort
the gear,
of stuff.
No idea.
Too many waggles for my mind. Just step up, deliver.
And you've hooted him.
Yeah, he's honked him. And he's turned around in disgust, shaking the fist, and his mates said it was hilarious.
Unacceptable, Jim. Oh,
yeah. My wife goes, "You're a moron." Yeah. It's funny, though.
Unacceptable, Jim. He could have been having the round of his life. Could have been waiting for a 68, and you've ruined it because his concentration was broken mid-swing.
No.
No.
Because he was only on the second hole, so I've ruined his round before it's even started.
He started the back nine. He started on 10.
No, I put him out of his misery early. He's going to have a bad 10. Round.
I don't mind the how's that, though. That's quite funny.
Not really.
Because it doesn't affect anything.
I think the thing is when those people do it, they genuinely think it's funny.
Yeah,
they do
look at Jim.
Look at you. You know it's funny just because you're tired. Don't get moody.
As my grandmother would say, I'm irritable.
Irritable. Don't be irritable. It's a Monday morning. Everything's good.
No, the reason I'm excited, the reason why I stayed up all night was what Lucas Herbert did.
Well,
now, I know we are going to talk to him, but just to set the scene, he made the cut by a shot. On Friday in the British Masters, which is a really big event. A lot of the European tours from the Ryder Cup were playing in it. It's worth a lot of money. And Lucas has gone from making the cut by shot to finishing in a tie for third, which is a significant paycheck. But again, we've sort of been charting his progress through the last sort of 3 or 4 months with some of the things he's been able to do without actually having a European tour card. He's now not only got one of those, but it's now almost a certainty that he'll be able to play in the Dubai tournament, which is worth $168 million.
Do you know how much he made overnight?
It would have been, you tell me.
$311,884.80.
There you go.
Oz?
Oz. Ooh. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a good day's work. Good 4 days' work.
After only just making the cut by a shot.
It's a great performance.
Crazy stuff.
Absolutely it is. He's been inspired of recent times. Not sure why. We need to get to the bottom of that with him.
I think it's worth talking about.
There's been a real change in him, that young man, and he's making absolute hay while the sun is shining over there and this opportunity he's had, Whitey. So we'll talk to him about that a little bit later on. Just more on etiquette. Can I just go back to etiquette for a second? Jim, I want to throw this to you because you weren't with us on Saturday. You boycotted us in the RSN Breakfast Club day at Caulfield. Thanks to Quinny at the Tab, who looked after us magnificently.
And then we looked after the Tab.
So we had the group quaddy fund.
Mm-hmm.
We invested $500 between 10 of us.
Yes.
As you do. Mm. And we got the quaddy, which is fantastic. We got $121 back, which isn't a lot, Jim.
Yes.
What do you do with $121 out of the $500 investment? What's the role of the person in charge of? Let's call them the group accountant.
Yes, the prez.
The prez?
The leader.
What's the role of that person from this point in time onwards?
It's to find the drunkest person in the group who often yells at the top of his voice.
Well, that's Andrew Mays every time.
Let it ride. That is normally what he shouted from the roof.
Which is what we did.
Yeah, and did you let it ride?
We let it ride.
I'm not sure whether we should be publicly talking about this.
Why is that?
Well, because it wasn't a particularly fine moment.
It was a fantastic moment because what happened was we let it ride, Jim, and we got the chockies and we got our cash back, plus an extra $60.
Now, here's the key. Whoever the prez was, did he pay out initial investments and just play with house money?
No.
Was that suggestion potentially made?
Well, there's no point playing with $60. You got 500 there.
I thought it was a bit more than that.
No, it was only another 60.
Right.
So we decided to go again.
No.
Let it ride.
Maitland? Dogs or something?
No, we were at Sha Tin.
Oh, even better.
On a $1.75 chance, as you do.
Zach Purton in hot form in Sha Tin. $1.75 chance. Everyone's tipped it. The whole world's tipped it. Hong Kong Hutchies tipped it. Racing.com. Like, the world was on this thing.
You didn't have the classical in the punters club, the person who goes up and tries to read the old big spreadsheets that used to be pinned on the board.
I've got it, guys.
I know the form in Sha Tin.
No, we didn't have that guy because there was no form in the bar we were at. But Hong Kong Hutchie let us down. So he's sacked from the Breakfast Club. He's never been on it, but he's sacked from it. Because he let down the whole group on Saturday with his $1.75 special. So Hong Kong Hutchie, you're out.
you let it ride on $1.75.
Because we came too far. We came that far.
There was an architect that was building a house back together.
Whitey was the group accountant, by the way, and he wasn't happy with the second investment.
The first investment was very good. The second one, I said no, and then, you know, Michael Felgate was the one. I'm prepared to put him out there. He was the one that said, let's do it.
Unbelievable. Very good. Very funny stuff. But thank you to Quinny again for the hospitality.
And I've got to say, it was absolutely spectacular at Caulfield on Saturday. I mean, the weather was fantastic, obviously, but the whole setup was, it was just a beautiful place to be. The racing was outstanding. For so many reasons, but it was just picture perfect.
It's a great racetrack, Caulfield Racetrack.
When it's a beautiful day and there's a full crowd and there's great racing, you just wouldn't want to be anywhere else in a lot of ways.
Well, you wanted to see the autumn sun up close. That's what you wanted to see. That was unbelievable, Jim.
Yeah, how impressive was that?
Unbelievable.
Was that as impressive as Yucatan?
Oh, Yucatan. It's rocketed into Melbourne Cup favouritism, I think, Yucatan. Was it as impressive? And Yucatan was unbelievable. It was wide. Well, Autumn Sun was wide as well, I suppose.
There was more expectations on Autumn Sun.
Yeah.
To be fair.
But Braindham and then Yucatan.
Well, I think it was the way Yucatan won.
That's what I'm asking.
Considering the run of the race and then taking off like that in a sort of a daring ride. It was almost like, could he hold on? Well, yes, he could.
Quite comfortably, in fact.
Whereas the Autumn Sun, it was just an exhibition. Mm. It was fantastic racing.
And there was, of course, the natural conversation when you dominate like that in the Guineas. You got to run in the Cox Plate, but Chris Waller's got it. He's got the wings going for four. It looks like he'll be out for the Autumn Sun. So I have no confirmation of that, but that was part of the discussion yesterday.
Yeah, it's pretty much been confirmed. Joe McKinnon on yesterday on RSN 927 got the news that the Autumn Sun would be going for a break and not coming back until the autumn.
He does that, Chris. He gets the good race out of the way in the spring with the three-year-olds and puts them away for the autumn often. So no real surprise, but I must admit, the prospect of the Autumn Sun and Winx with a 49.5 for Autumn Sun and the Cox Plate was tantalising for about 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
There.
I mean, the storylines, and it wasn't just that either, half, because Ben Battle did really well also in the Caulfield Stakes, and to have the European the Raider up against Winks, up against the youngster. That would have been a fantastic storyline. We're still hopefully going to get that with Ben Battle, but just that extra layer. The three-year-old is always, the star three-year-old in a Cox plate always adds that extra intrigue. There's no doubt about that.
We've had some winners in recent years too, with So You Think and Seamus Wharton.
Yep.
So we've had some winners, had some results for the three-year-olds. Yep. So it does create another element of discussion for the Cox plate, which doesn't need too much more because Winx is going for four in a row.
Yes. I think Mooney Valley will be reasonably happy with where things are placed.
I think the crowd will be quite high.
Yes.
Jim. Yes. Yes.
What a performance. Mark Leishman wins the CIMB Classic, and he wins it easily. Final round, 65.
A final round, 65 for Mark Leishman, as you heard there, to take out his fourth victory on the US PGA Tour. Two wins last season, one already this season in the CIMB Championship. It was called Classic, it was. 26 under par, and just for those playing at home, this is how impressive that was. The 26 under 262 ties Justin Thomas's course record, and the five-stroke victory ties the tournament course record as well. He's had a big weekend. The Leash. And we love when he's up and about. He's coming home for the summer of golf as well. Whitey for the World Cup, the Australian PGA. And that was a dominant performance from our man.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he shot 65 in the final round, but he set it up early on. He birdied 2, 3, 4, and 5. So he didn't start the final round in front. He's ended up shooting a 65 on Sunday to win by 5 shots and shoot 26 under. But it was just done so easily. And I know it wasn't an overly difficult golf course, but the field was still pretty strong. You know, Justin Thomas was the one that had to be beaten because he has won there twice before. But, yeah, it was just a walk in the park. So, as you said, he's coming back for... he's going to be the headline act for the Australian summer because we're not going to see much of Adam Scott or certainly Jason Day. Mark Leishman now, as a result of winning, goes back inside the top 20 in the world. So he's coming for the World Cup here at Metropolitan. He's coming for the Australian PGA. So he's sort of going to be the poster boy, I think, for the summer.
Never misses anything from Fox Sports. He's the main man there, is Adam Peacock. He's been all over that, as well as the Usain Bolt story that's bubbling along beautifully in the A-League at the moment. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Adam.
Morning, boys. Yeah, I was there on at Randwick on Saturday, but I too witnessed it with my very own eyes and missed it with my very own eyes. I've talked myself out of it and going in the US Navy flag, but anyway, can't win them all.
I think that is actually the horse that I backed. Hey, but just before we go on to Usain Bolt, just on the whole experience of the Everest, what was it like, Adam?
Superb. Absolutely superb. And anyone who tells you otherwise wasn't there. It was a great day. It hosed down three times, as it does in Sydney with big events. It was terrible conditions, but if there's 40,000 people there, you wouldn't want it too many more. It felt like a massive race day. I'm very fortunate to be able to go to places like Royal Ascot, also Cox Plate Day, Melbourne Cup Day, Derby Day, all of those big days, and it just, I'm not going to say one was above the other, but one, like, it certainly felt everything what those days are. And it was just a good fun day, really.
Adam, further that, is it capturing, I guess, people who do have a little bit of a love or a passing interest in racing, or are they all new people to racing, you feel like? It's capturing a sort of new generation of race goers?
Yeah, well, most of the crowd was under 35, it felt like, so it felt like a new generation was definitely there. Whether or not they're racing people or not, I'm not sure. I didn't go around and ask them, but it felt like a newer crowd, which is good for racing because they need to rejuvenate themselves. And I know the Caulfield Carnival do really hard work in that regard to try and get young people there. And I remember going to a Caulfield Cup Day 10 years ago and I felt like the oldest man there. So it's not an easy thing to do to try and get these people to the thing. And ordinarily, at a meeting like that at Randwick, we would have got 5,000 people. I got 40.
Yep. No, I think it was a winner. It's hard to argue it was a winner, and we'll talk more about that through the morning. Speaking of winners, Usain Bolt's been a winner for Central Coast. The Master Food sauce bottles have become a big part of the business now, and when he's scoring goals, the sauce bottles are going to be seen all over the world, Adam.
They are. He's still on trial, but, he took a few steps towards getting an actual contract on Friday night, and of course it went viral. Now, it's great that it's gone viral, and it's great that it's put A-League at the forefront of of discussion in terms of whether or not this guy's going to get a contract. It won't happen this week. I'd be amazed if it happened this week, if he got a contract before their first game. I reckon, realistically, we're looking at a couple of months before he's considered for a contract, and they can give him those couple of months. The roster's not full. And then maybe halfway through the season, they give him something like a guest contract, which is a 10-game, 14-game stint, where he's really he's not actually taking the place of someone. And, yeah, they just give him a go. So the experiment goes on, I think.
And that's not a bad thing. I quite like the way this is all unfolding, to be honest with you, because there was a lot of discussion at the start when this was announced that this is purely just a marketing ploy and a PR extravaganza, and it's not really going to come to fruition. And it may not, but what we're seeing is that Central Coast are doing their due diligence, as we've said 15 times this morning in other sports, and they're just finding out whether or not it's legitimate. From your perspective, though, you've seen a lot of players come and go. From what you saw on the weekend, was there signs that perhaps there is something to work with?
There are signs. He's got a lot of work to do to become a professional footballer. And you don't want to just... And I know if there was anyone you were going to chuck it at, it's probably in the fire that you would of any sports people. But you don't want to devalue a professional contract at this level by just chucking it his way. So a lot of one-on-one work to do in particular, and just the little things, like working off the ball and movements and space awareness, and those things that come are just second nature to professional players. He doesn't quite have yet. So how they get that into him remains to be seen. At a good enough level, he's got a little bit of it, but at a good enough level remains to be seen. And hopefully he gives himself every conceivable chance. He doesn't get the ump and go, I'm not waiting around for two more months. But that realistically is the way to go, I feel.
Adam, all positions are hard to play, but where is his position if he is to make it?
Oh, it's up front where he played the other night. Now, he played as a central striker. He could maybe play as a winger, but he'd have to do a lot more defensive work. I think the central striker role is probably... His technique on his headers, actually, must be said, was pretty damn good. And we know his height and his vertical leap is off the charts. So... he's got that in his locker, but yeah, I can't see how he can play anywhere but up front because of the defensive duties that you have on a football field that he just doesn't quite understand yet. It'll be dangerous to put him anywhere else.
So from what you've seen to this point versus what you thought when it all happened at the start with the announcement, where do you sit? Is he going better than you thought he'd be? What you thought? Where do you sit?
Marginally better than I thought he would. I mean, I knew he'd improve because you had to believe him when he said, I'm going to do everything I can, and he has. Like, I asked all the Mariners guys before, I said, what's he like, really? And not one of them even had a hint of a bad word to say about him. So he's doing all the little things that you need to do to get yourself right. After that first game that he played a few weeks ago, or a month or so ago, I thought, oh my God, he's so far up against it because that was a team of pub players and he looked all over the shop. But seeing him the other night, and they were NPL players, they were good NPL players, which is like second division, if you like, in Australian football. He held his own for parts of it. So yeah, I was a little taken aback at the progress that he's made.
And then the complicated question, and I don't know the answer to it, as to whether it's good or bad for the league, whether it is a gimmick or whether it's legitimate. We're talking about it on a Monday morning down here in Melbourne. The A-League starts this weekend, so we are talking about the A-League, so that's a good thing. But is it a good thing that we're talking about it and not the actual competition? I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah, this is the big question where you've got your football-loving types in Australia that are almost not sneering at this, but looking down on it, going, far out, guys. Really, are we really relying on this guy to try and publicise the fact that the A-League's starting? Now, it's kind of happened as it has, that the FFA certainly hasn't gone out of its way to try and promote Usain Bolt. I can't remember the FFA putting out an ad or a promotional activity to say that Usain Bolt's playing or whatever. I might be wrong, but they've certainly gone heavy on all the W League stars returning, and Sam Kerr and KSK Honda, for instance, playing for Melbourne Victory, and the overseas players, just about all of whom have played in the big leagues around the world. So they've got heavy on that, and the Australian players too, amongst all that. So the FFA have gone heavy on that. So the football types are like, oh, we don't need this. Let's concentrate on promoting the football because the football's good enough to promote. Whereas people outside the bubble are going, oh, Usain Bolt, Usain Bolt, Usain Bolt, which is fair enough. So we're going to reach this juncture soon, whether or not he's good enough and we get him in for the right reasons, or if he's not good enough and we get him in for the wrong reasons, or we just let him go. So, yeah, that's the big, big question that's on the way, and we're still yet to find that out.
Well, I reckon it's been a decent week if you're a North Melbourne supporter, and Cameron Joyce is the list manager of the Kangas. Needs a pay rise, as far as I'm concerned. Joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Cam.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on. Have you put in for a pay rise just yet, or are you waiting a couple of days?
No, I'm certainly not. Certainly not. No, our list manager, Michael McMahon, and his recruiting staff have done a great job thus far. So, he's probably more the one that's going to ask me for a pay rise, I think.
So. Has it gone up to plan, or have you been able to get a few bonuses through the week so far, with 3 days to go?
I think it's probably even potentially maybe exceeded what we thought potentially. So, once things sort of happened with Andrew Gaff making his decision, then we sort of, I suppose, diverted to plan B a little bit. Being able to get a couple of really quality midfielders in Jared Pollock and Dom Tyson, but also adding a running defender, which was a real need of ours in Jasper Pittard, has been really good.
Are you done, Cameron? You mentioned that, some midfielder, some run, obviously Pittard, a running halfback type, but was that the need you identified and went after it?
Yeah, definitely. Look, we're keen to also bring Aaron Hall in over the next 3 days. So we've been in discussions with Gold Coast over the last few weeks. So we think we'll be able to get that done as well. And he also had some real speed and ability to get out of the contest, from the inside out. And obviously he's a really good kick of the footy too. So we're keen to bring him in to complement, the players that we've already got on our list.
Cam, the Dom Tyson one was really interesting because it sort of emerged very quickly after Melbourne's season that he might have been looking for an opportunity elsewhere. When did he get on your radar?
Oh, look, we always had some interest in Dom and was sort of following it closely, where he was at with Melbourne. And then the opportunity came up we really went hard there to see if we could, acquire Dom. And he obviously had interest from others. So we were really pleased that he wanted to come and play with our footy club.
Did the interest and, I guess, the hardness you went after him become more evident once Big Braden Pruce picked Melbourne?
Yeah, it's sort of all stars aligned a little bit there because it's always easier to facilitate a trade when the club, certainly another club, wants one of your players and you want one of theirs. So it sort of made it a little bit easier to facilitate a trade and a deal.
That's one of those deals, Jimmy, just don't sign quick enough, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
Are you serious? Let's do it. Let's do it now.
Yeah, nice swap, mate. Cameron, we always talk about, the domino that goes on in trade and free agency. Do you get that sense when you're sitting in those little corporate suites and sharing the, the tuna sandwiches with other clubs that you're all waiting on someone else's deal?
A little bit. I think it's probably more prevalent for those that have got the, that are in the really big, into the really big names. So, the ones that are, you're going to talk about it through today, through Wednesday, in terms of the Shields and the Dylan Shield and May and the Hogans and Neils and those sort of guys. That there's a fair bit that plays on those because they're at such a high level. They're at a high level in terms of a trade value, but they're also at a high level in terms of salary. So that adjusts your TPP accordingly, but also too depends on do you have to get a player out to get a player in because of that, and then what are the machinations for your own footy club? So it's certainly at that level. For us, it probably hasn't fazed us as much because I think we've been reasonably separate in terms of those deals. So, but I understand exactly what you mean. If you're in those ones or on the edges of it, then it certainly does affect you.
Now, one of the challenges for people in your position, as well as the other staff at the footy clubs through the trade period, is to give yourself the best possible position in the draft as well coming up. That's part of your mantra. You bring in players, but you've got to position yourself as best you can for the draft as well. And you're in an interesting position, Cam, because you've got Tarryn Thomas, who's an NGA kid who you're trying to get points for, and then you've got Bailey Scott, who's nominated the Kangaroos under a father-son situation. How difficult and delicate is the managing of what you have access to points-wise while you're doing all this trading of players?
Yeah, well, sort of when you think about some of those players you've mentioned, and, you know, Bailey last week indicated that he was keen to come and play with us, that, you know, if you know, you're also trying to, you're almost trying to trade, in a sense, for those players as well during the period. So, so really what you're doing is, you know, giving yourself enough wriggle room, I suppose, in terms of points and picks and that sort of stuff, that, you know, you don't wake up and, you know, 22nd of November and get a shock. So
when the Andrew Gaff news came through, which obviously wasn't the news you were hoping, what, take us into the footy club in regards to morale in that situation. Was it, did you have to, you know, a couple of hours or a day or so to sort of pick yourselves back up, or was it very much you had to be philosophical the whole way through that process?
Oh, look, probably because we've done it, you know, we've been there before. You know, we weren't getting our hopes up by any means, but knew we were right there, knowing that it went so far. I think one of the best things for us is that it was actually probably hours before the trade period started. Like, it was the previous day on Sunday. So, to be honest, if it had been at the end of the home away season or during the finals, I probably would have been shattered for a few weeks. But I think in terms of being able to get back on the horse quickly, like, there was no alternative.
Yep.
So the next day we're literally in at the club at 7:30, 8 o'clock. You know, walking over to Etihad at 9:30, meeting clubs at 10 o'clock. So it was sort of, you know, you're back on the horse and you know, you move on. And as I said, you know, we had our sort of plan A's and B's, and, you know, thus far we've been able to execute on that.
Now, I'll put up front that I think it's fantastic the way you guys the last couple of years have been so aggressive in trying to get big names in and been quite public about it. But because it hasn't been successful in getting that really big name, you've had some really good wins along the way with Higgins and Waite, etc. Do you have to potentially look at changing that tactic, or are you comfortable to be public and be bold and brazen as you have been in the past?
We certainly probably would like it not to be as public, to be honest. But that's the nature of the beast sometimes, and you know how it all unfolds. But we'll still continue to be aggressive in pardon me, in trying to attract the best players that we can to North Melbourne and the best staff and you know, across the board. So, no, we'll continue to go down that path. I think there's always a balance, you know, because there's only, you know, even if you're fortunate to get one, you know, top line player in the competition, it's not like you can fit four or five in. So, I think there's no doubt there's a balance to it, and there's also too the retention of your own players too that gets forgotten during this period, because it's all about obviously obtaining players from other clubs.
We like young men who are going places in a hurry as well, and basically the Breakfast Club has inspired Lucas Herbert to greatness. A top three finish, a third place finish in the British Masters across the weekend. A good payday. It's been a big month for the young man. He's been good enough to join us to discuss that and more. Good morning, Lucas. Well done.
Hello, boys. Thank you.
Outstanding performance, mate. Now, we spoke to you a couple of weeks ago and you had a bit of a prayer offer to go and be a part of, was it the Portugal Masters, I think it might have been, to go and play and do what you could while you were there. And all of a sudden, you've been there for a month and you're dominating. Well, what's going on? What's been the difference?
Yeah, I don't know. We've found a little purple patch here. I had a caddy change. I picked up Martin Keimer's old caddy, whose name is Craig Connolly.
So he's done the last 2 weeks and two top tens. So he's he's putting in a pretty good pitch for the job offer at the moment.
An outstanding pitch, I'd reckon. Tell us, because we always see caddies with players on tour and we're watching on the television, and assume you have a great relationship and you're really comfortable with each other. When you've got a new caddy, what's that filling out process like?
It can be a little bit difficult. I think for them knowing how to handle you when you hit bad shots or you have bad patches and rounds and that kind of thing. You know, some people, I mean, it's probably like dealing with a football team. Some guys, you know, you've really got to, sort of just get into them and, you know, tell them what you think of them and really rev them up. And then some guys, you know, need a bit of TLC to get the best out of them. So sometimes it can be a lot of managing that and just obviously knowing my game as well, learning what's strong. What shots are my strengths and what shots are my weaknesses and, you know, trying to give me the best advice based on that.
So what kind of guy are you, Lucas? Are you a revved up hype man? Are you the man who needs to be calmed down, or are you the man who just needs the cuddle?
Well, I definitely don't need a cheerleader on my team. So, I'm more than happy to be told that I'm nowhere near as good as what I think I am and that I need to pull my finger out and start performing to, you know, get the results that I need to get.
Well, the results are certainly showing. And half said, you got the invite, the late call-up. So what do you do now? You've stayed on. Do you have to go buy an extra pair of jocks? Like, how do you prepare for, you know, the longer stay in Europe?
Well, I've just booked my flight home tomorrow. So heading back. So I've played four the last 5 weeks now. So that's sort of been a good stint. But, yeah, ready to go home and sort of get ready to play Turkey, Nedbank in Dubai coming up in... 3 weeks' time.
It's extraordinary to think you got to this point, Lucas, that you can actually now talk about Turkey, you can talk about playing in the Nedbank, and then Dubai. I mean, compared to where you were 5 or 6 weeks ago, where it was all about just trying to secure that card. I mean, it's happened so dramatically and so quickly.
Yeah, it's been a massive, obviously, like a whirlwind sort of thing. Working hard to try and keep my card, and then... bang, 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 and all of a sudden we've sort of got the results we had. So it's been really good, but I think the pleasing thing has been, you know, after I got my card in Portugal, it probably would have been a bit easy to sort of sit back and relax a bit, knowing that, you know, my goal had been ticked off, and I could have had some poorer performances coming in these last two events that I've just played, but. I've sort of reset some goals and found some new motivation and been able to sort of get the good results out of myself that, you know, I knew that I had there and, you know, have been sort of producing under the gun all year, just a little bit less pressure on me now, obviously, knowing that I can I can go out there with nothing to lose.
Because I want to ask you about that, about the changing motivation, because it wasn't about chasing a top 115 or a top 100. It was you got that. So what were the fresh goals you put in place to make sure you kept that intensity about you and kept this momentum rolling?
Well, I think, you know, from the start of the year, getting a European Tour card seemed pretty, like, it was a pretty ridiculous kind of thought to think that I could do what I've done this year. It was obviously going to take a lot of good golf, but it was going to take so much more than that, given, you know, the sort of schedule that I was going to have to play and the late notice that I was going to have to, you know, endured it to, you know, I guess getting invites, you know, to play Amsterdam. I got the invite at 1 a.m. on Sunday morning, and, you know, I'm on a plane that night out there ready to go, and I've, you know, had sort of no time really to prepare. So, that was a pretty out there sort of goal, I thought. And so obviously ticked that off. So I thought, well, for the rest of the year, you know, we may as well make it another outlandish sort of goal. So I set my goal is to get to the top 50 in the world by the end of the year, which I was at 117 or 114 after Portugal, I think. So it doesn't seem that far, but it's a long way when I think, like, the space between guys once you get closer up to the top is a lot bigger than what it is, you know, down at 400. You can jump 70 spots quite easily when you're at 400 in the world versus when you're at 117, it's a lot harder. So that's the new goal for the end of the year, is to try and get there. So I've got a pretty good idea of what I need to do. It's gonna need more good results like I've had, but I think it's really kept that competitive drive about me, and, you know, made me really you know, play some good golf out there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary. Your story this year is simply extraordinary. It's almost a book-like type situation. The last question I've got for you, I know Jimmy and Huff have got their hands up. I'm hogging it. I'm going one more. You make the cut by one this week, and then you go on from that position. So you almost went home. You could have been home now. You make it by one, and then you go on and you make $300,000 for the weekend. What do you do in that? Like, is that crazy to even think about that sort of thing?
Yeah, it is. I think, and it's even probably like, you know, for everyone probably sitting at home listening, it's pretty crazy to think that, like, I've just made, that, you know, it's like $315,000 Australian dollars, I think, the conversion rate is. But there's sort of two things that everyone forgets. It's like, one, I've got to pay tax and my own expenses on top of that. So, like, that's probably 40% straight up that I'm going to lose just from, there's an international withholding tax that you've got to pay and, you know, all sorts of other stuff that obviously come out of that. So, it's not that figure. And secondly, it's basically Monopoly money anyway with the amount you've got to spend to play out here each week. You know, $315,000 sounds like a lot, but it sort of doesn't go that far, realistically. You know, the money I've made this year, I've had some ridiculous outgoings as well. So it's sort of, I think it was just more crazy because, you know, I stood on AT&T on, well, Saturday morning because we had to restart because we did run out of light Friday night. But I had to make birdie on 18 to make the cut, and I hit a wedge from about 110 to 2 feet, made that. And then, you know, go out that afternoon and shoot 67, and then go out today in some pretty tough conditions and shoot 69. And it was like, that was pretty crazy. But it was sort of cool to experience it as well.
Well, it's great to watch you do it, no doubt. I just want to find out, just you're talking before about getting the card and securing that. Is there a tangible and a physical stress level reduction in your golf? And is that enabling you to play a bit more aggressively, a bit more freely since you've been able to secure that card, knowing that you've got a bit more certainty about your calendar next year?
Yeah, well, I think today I was able to be a lot more aggressive. Like, you know, I thought, so the front, I don't know whether many people watched it, but like the front nine all week was into the wind for probably 70% of the holes, and it played quite tough. And today the wind switched and we got the first nine holes straight downwind, basically. So, you know, had two par fives that now became really reachable, whereas that, you know, they were quite tricky, especially if you drove it in the heather for the first three rounds. And so I thought if I could get off to a good start, you know, that would get me right up near the lead and give me a chance. So I think with that, you know, with the mentality that you know that your cards, you know that you're going to have somewhere to play next year, you can just more focus on trying to win rather than worried about, well, if this doesn't go well, you know, I've still got to try and focus and, you know, try and hold on to a position as opposed to like, oh, well, you know, we've got to make, you know, three shots up coming into the back nine. Let's just keep pushing and try really hard, you know. And it sounds funny because golf, you know, you should just be shoot the lowest score you can. But I think when you know there's nothing to lose if it doesn't come off, that's, you know, I think you tend to get a lot more aggressive and, you know, sometimes it pays off.
Well, it paid off on the weekend. And it wasn't a win. It was a top three finish. And it's been a great little campaign for you over there in Europe. And you've, as Whitey said, you position yourself beautifully for Race to Dubai activity as well. And you're coming home. So what happens when you get home?
I'll go to bed for about 3 days, I think. Yeah, I'm absolutely wrecked. Like, usually after the last round of tournament, you go out and enjoy a couple of beverages, especially with that sort of finish. But I'm in bed already at about 8 o'clock. On a Sunday night, so I think I'm playing the Ainsbury Pro Am this weekend just to try and dust off some jet lag problems, and then just chill out for a few days and try and get ready for Turkey.
One of the issues that's been bubbling along in the world of football this year, and certainly well the last couple of years as well, has been the plight of Tasmanian football and how do we get it back on the map, so to speak. Well, one of the ways you do it is start from the bottom up with the TAC Cup team, the Devils, coming back into the competition. And you need someone very, very aware of the status of Tasmanian football and accomplished enough to lead the charge. And they've done a great job in securing Adrian Fletcher as the coach of the Devils in the TAC Cup. He's been good enough to join us on the Breakfast Club. Fletch, good morning.
Hello, Daniel. How are you, mate?
Very well, good. Thank you. Very well, mate. Great to have you on. Now, this is close to your heart. You're a Glenorchy superstar back in the old days. When this was presented to you, or did you get yourself in position for this job, what did you think when they said yes?
Yeah, no, I was really excited. Obviously, the DNA, being a Tassie boy, get back to Van Diemen's land and actually give something back to the locals. I've learned a lot over the journey and had the opportunity to be a coach and then into the development area. And I just know what kids need to be able to get drafted these days.
Fletch, Jimmy Bartel here, mate. Congratulations on the job. You've been a part of footy, obviously, in Tassie. You've been at Geelong, Queensland, WA. Why is Tassie footy unique, or how's it different from those other footballing states, if you will?
Well, they got the history of the map on the jumper, and that's a legacy that will never go away for some reason. It's just very passionate, and they've had some great players, Jimmy, come out of the area, and Hudson and Baldock and all those guys. So they're icons that they can try and get young people to understand that you can become an AFL player. It's pretty close to Melbourne. Got a really good history about the game, and they've got some really good locations with the grounds. Now it's just making sure. It's very hard to get kids drafted these days because the back end of the draft, they're starting to recruit older players, and we just got to make sure our kids get the skills early and can cope with pressure, and that's the hardest thing, cope with pressure in Tassie. It's a country town.
So further, What is the biggest challenge? You said they love their footy. We always know Tassie is a great and proud footy state. What's the biggest issue why it hasn't kept rolling along or kicking along?
Obviously, sometimes recruiters won't pick a Tassie boy because holistically they say they can't cope with the Melbourne lifestyle or the other lifestyle. So we've got to fix that. Make sure our kids understand it's high pressure. You've got to be able to live a lifestyle and be able to play the game at top level. You can't be drinking with your mates 16, 17 years of age. You've got to be making sure you put your time into your skills and your development as a young age. The other thing we need to fix is they got to live the dream that they're close enough to AFL clubs to see what happens. The good thing in Queensland, the kids walk through the change rooms and they see that Dane Zorko, they see those guys as a 17 and 18 year old, they're actually touching it. And North Melbourne comes in for four games. We just got to get to Melbourne and go and see what these clubs are about.
Are you comfortable with what's going on, Adrian? I'm sure you are because you've taken on this job. But with all the changes that are being made down in Tasmania to make Tasmania great again, is it all being done the right way?
Oh, well, they've drawn the line in the sand. As you said, they're going to put the resources into it. That's the first thing. Obviously, you need the money on the ground floor with people, staff. We've got to get all the stakeholders on the same page and make sure that we're going in the same direction. We need to get back to the under-12s to make sure that our development programs are starting at a good age and they're learning the skills of kicking, ground ball, all those chaos sort of drills, that backyard stuff that was happening when we were growing up. And we just got to get that right. And we've got to make sure we promote the game and make sure they understand that it's not easy to get drafted these days, and we just got to have the intensity down there in Tassie and teach the kids what intensity is about.
And is your part of your role, as well as coaching development as well down there in Tassie, get the pathway from the very young, the under-10s, under-12s, to make sure they're in the right system coming forward?
Yeah, no, it'll be a top-down approach. We've got to make sure that our under-12s, if we've got some summer programs, are doing high-performance stuff, and we've got to get the volume of kids in there. We've got to make sure that we have some hubs where the volume of kids come in and start their running programs, their kicking programs. And then, obviously, we'll filter that right up to 18, 19. And then, hopefully, one day, they'll definitely get a VFL team in, which will give them another chance if you don't get drafted at 18, that you get a chance at 19, 20 to get drafted, which is not able now because, statewide, the gap's too big to AFL footy.
Do you reckon it's the best time to take up a position like this, Fletch, considering the momentum that Tassie footy has had, and even from people on the mainland to give Tassie a team in the AFL eventually, that there's a real support for that at the moment, that this is the perfect job to really reignite footy in Tassie?
Yeah, no, it's a perfect job, other than I've got to buy myself a puffer jacket and a pair of gloves. It's the perfect time it's the perfect time to get in, but I'm not looking forward to the winters. But I know that Will Hodgman and the government down there are really keen for this to work. I know the AFL are really keen for Gill, really wants it to work. And AFL Taz really wants it to work. You know, Tricia Squires has got some great people now that she can get to put in the areas and make it work. And we've got hubs right around Tasmania. I mean, it's a big state. You can't do it out of Hobart. We've got people in Launceston now, Devonport in the talent ID area. So that's going to help the program.
Fletcher, the rules the TAC Cup play under, just you looking at it and you've been involved with plenty of young talent, does it best prepare them for AFL level, especially the key forwards in particular, where they can isolate inside 50, but they get to AFL level and they've got defenders around them everywhere?
That's a great call. Great call, Jimmy. It helps the midfielders. We know that because you've got a long run long and it's 5-on-5 and they get plenty of the footy, but the forwards, they come at the kicker. They don't do the back leads that well when they get to the AFL. And as you said, defenders drop off really quickly and you got numbers, you got to be able to find the holes, and the TAC rules probably don't help that.
These names on the Victorian PGA Trophy: Nagel, Thompson, Davis, Leishman, and you can add a name, Pike, to that now after the weekend's tournament down at the Cape Shank, RACV Cape Shank Resort. Aaron Pike we speak of, who won his first tournament on the weekend. He's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club. Aaron, good morning. Going all right, mates. You listen to those names: Nagel, Thompson, Davis, Leishman, and now Pike's there on that Victorian PGA Trophy. How does that sound? How's it feel?
Yeah, pretty amazing group. Yeah, with Leishman winning again on the weekend, so he just keeps on going, doesn't he?
He does. He's pretty good, is our man Mark Leishman. But you've had a big weekend yourself. Your first tournament victory. When it got close, and I think you had to wait on the 18th to see if Ryan Chisnell was going to birdie and take you to a playoff. What was it like sitting through watching that last hole?
Obviously never had to sit through it because I've never won before, but yeah, it was a bit weird sort of sitting there waiting and watching and sort of seeing how it all sort of pans out, but it was great to sort of see how it all finished, but in hindsight, I'd rather just sort of win by a few so I don't have to do that next time.
That makes perfect sense to me. You start with a 71 and you finish with a 65, 66 and 68, 2 under 68 to finish the day. You said yesterday that yesterday was the best you've played, you just didn't capitalise on your opportunities. You had a 65 on Friday. You must have played pretty well yesterday then.
Yeah, I played unbelievable yesterday. I was playing with a good friend of mine, or a couple of good friends of mine, and a guy who's won on our tour a hell of a lot. And I was under the impression, no disrespect to the other guys in the field, I thought if I could beat him, I would probably win the tournament. And I obviously did beat him on the day, and I thought to myself, if I get through the 18 holes and I was beating him by the end of the 18, I thought I'd win the tournament because I thought he was the man to beat. And I played really, really good, and he was kind enough to write me a very nice message last night, actually, and sort of saying, mate, it was unbelievable to watch how patient you were considering how things weren't falling for you. So it was one of those sort of days where I felt as though that everything was going right for me except the final hurdle. But I suppose when you're going to get your first win, everything doesn't fall right for you. It's not easy. It's not the way it's meant to be. You've got to fight for it. So it was really, really good to do it. But yeah, I genuinely felt as though I played unbelievable yesterday. I just didn't quite do everything I should. So it was good to get there in the end, to be honest.
Aaron, you mentioned you're feeling unbelievable, and only one guy, yeah, you probably think could maybe knock you off. What gives you that feeling? Is it standing on the tee and you just crunching drivers, is it just the balls rolling beautifully on the green for you with the putter?
Well, it's quite weird. Like my greatest strength in my game is my putting, and that was the thing that kind of on the back nine yesterday kind of dropped off a little bit. So I was hitting the ball unbelievable. I knew I was giving myself so many good opportunities. It was just a matter of in the past, my mindset would have probably got the better of me. My brain would have just let me, you know, quite probably get a bit angry at myself, whatever else, but I was just the whole week, I said, at Cape Schenck, just the kind of golf course it is, the weather down there, I said it was probably not the guy who would play the best. It was the guy that had the greatest mindset would probably win the tournament. So every single time something didn't go my way, I was just like, just refocus, start again, keep going. And I just kept pushing on, pushing on. And all of a sudden, you know, I had the perfect number to make birdie up the last to win the tournament. So it was just a matter of just sticking with it, sticking with it, sticking with it. And just, I know it's very cliche, but I just genuinely was just forcing myself to stay patient, stay with it, stay in the moment. And in hindsight, obviously it worked because I won.
You're speaking about mindset, and you seem like a guy who, you know, has that strong will in his game, but getting a win, does it just reaffirm everything for you and give you even greater confidence now?
Yeah, it does, yeah. Well, 2017, I've been a pro for a while, but 2017 I didn't play at all because I had a nerve problem in my back, my right hip and my back. So I actually wasn't able to play at all. So having the ability to actually come back and play, I've got a different, I suppose, affinity on it. And it's probably given me new lease on life, to be honest. But yeah, it's something that I've obviously wanted to do, and to obviously win on tour and all the rest of it. I've had a lot of opportunities, but yeah, to finally do it's really, really good. So,
two questions I've got for you, Aaron. Firstly, the weather yesterday. I mean, it was windy in Melbourne, which means it was really windy there where you were. And a lot of people that are listening to this interview would play down on the Mornington Peninsula in the wind and find it really difficult. What's the secret to shooting a 68 at Cape Schenck in those sorts of conditions?
it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy down there. You can obviously say that from the scores, I think. I think there's a few boys that had some really, really nice scores sort of in the mid-60s, but the guys at the top, they all sort of struggled. And, yeah, obviously I played well. I had 200, but, yeah, there's a lot of guys there that had some... There's a lot of guys there that had some big numbers, but the old cliche of just when it's windy, swing it easy.
Yeah.
There's no rocket science to it. It's just if you can control the ball, if you can keep the ball down, you can swing it nice and smooth, the ball will go where you want it to. So, but they did a great job down there. Like with the setup of the golf course, they could have easily have set it up where it was just an absolute joke down there because obviously how windy it is. But they set it up very fair, very nice. It was a great venue. It was good fun to play down there. Next time, I hope there's no wind whatsoever, but I don't think that's ever going to happen.
No, I don't think it is either. And I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. But
no.
To win, what does that do to you now? I mean, the $15,000 paycheck, but the whole thing about the surety of being on tour and all those sorts of things. We spoke to Lucas Herbert a little bit earlier this morning, and you know, he was playing in these events less than 12 months ago.
Mm.
But you know, he secured his European Tour card, and all of a sudden he plays with a bit more freedom. What will it mean to you, this?
Yeah, that realistically, with you know, but that's, I'm not sort of trying to be conceited or disrespectful to the prize money, but the prize money is actually very, very secondary to the exemptions that
yeah,
sort of
absolutely.
Get in Australia. So obviously, I'm exempt throughout the rest of this year and all of next year, which means I've sort of got the freedom to be. I've got the freedom to sort of go and try and potentially play some overseas few schools, go and do what I need to, knowing that I've got that security back home here in Australia. So it does really open some doors. But also what it also does is if you play as well as I did this week in an Australian PGA or a Victorian Open at the start of next year, which is a European Tour event, you know that you're probably going to win a European Tour event, which means then you're going to be exempt to play, like Lucas Herbert, like Wade Ormsby, like all of the big names that are playing in Europe and also the US. So that's also that confidence that you take out of it, knowing that you've got something additional to potentially do.
There's a tweet that's just come through, Half.
Yes, talk to me.
Aaron's loves the horses. He might be able to have a tip for it. He might be able to have a tip for us today.
Anything for us at Echuca today, Aaron?
Mate, I'm not going to lie. I just got up. It's I am fortunate enough to know a couple of jockeys and a few jockey managers and stuff, but I haven't even looked at my phone as to know what I should ride. I do know that Timmy Clark is on a horse in the Caulfield Cup, and he did give me a call last night to let me know. I'm probably going to go to the Caulfield Cup, and he thinks it's worth a go, so maybe the listeners should have a go at that.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.